and, you know, how do you enjoy prosperity? Well, you do all the stuff that got you there in the first place.
This is Dirt and Sprague.
All the little things, you know, it's not some deal where you I'll get in trouble for this, I'm certain, but
Andy Dirt Johnson.
Where, you know, instead of playing hard and getting a first down and getting a play, then, you know, you want to sit behind a shade tree, eat a fish sandwich, and drink a lemonade with your fat little girlfriend.
And Brendan Sprague.
I'm working on this trademark cough. What do you think? It's getting better, too. Well, then, we marched it downfield.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080, The Fan.
R.I.P. the Pirate, good morning. Hour number two, Dirt and Sprague here on 1080, The Fan, the Odyssey app, 99.5 HD2, and, of course, YouTube.
We don't sound like chipmunks today, so that's cool.
Told my wife yesterday that happened. She goes, really? That's hilarious. And I was like, no, actually, it wasn't.
Not the reaction I'm looking for, honey.
Not great.
Thank you for that, though.
Not great.
Thank you for laughing at me.
I do think it's starting to kind of go hop around social media, and I don't want to react to social media, but I do think it's going to become a big topic in the media climate this morning. The Mel Kiper two safety elimination, and now people are freaking out because the passing games have dropped.
It's so stupid.
It's going to become a conversation today. You buckle up, everybody. Your podcasts, your local shows, everybody's going to be diving in. Should the NFL ban high safety looks?
How do you ban that? What is it, like the shift in baseball?
Yeah.
You can't have two people more than 15 yards past the line of scrimmage. Like, what are we doing
Should
here?
You still be able to hack Shaq? It's going to be one of those conversations today. Oh, God forbid the run games matter.
Yeah, tell your
run
the football. Practice free throws more. Make them. Yeah, they won't foul
you. That's on you. It's funny, too, because he had a take earlier this week that I thought was perfect. He had a take on the Bryce Young situation.
Played it yesterday on NFL Ziggur's Ag.
How bad he's handled it. And it was like, yeah, I mean, for him and his pumpkin pie, that's a pretty damn good Mel Kiper take. And then you come out with this nonsense the very next day. What are we doing?
I did have a moment this weekend in watching Sunday Ticket. And just seeing all the games, and clearly you can tell the passing attacks have dropped, offense has fallen down.
Well, running games are back, so that's the balance
of
this.
Well, that was my takeaway, was I was chuckling, folding laundry, watching, going, oh, running backs matter again.
Yeah, we're
going
to give them $20 million a year now?
Do receivers not matter as much? What's the reaction to all this going to be?
The market and free agency is going to change drastically.
Brooke Olsendam will join us at the bottom of the hour, live from Corvallis, Oregon, USA.
Ooh, what are they doing down there? Hanging out?
Rip City Rallies.
Hey, nice.
With Coos Bay, I think. They're in Corvallis today. They hit all the local, smaller towns.
Should I open it? Does it smell like manure right now?
No. I wanted to actually ask her, and I don't think I can.
No.
I don't know if you watched the event yesterday.
I did not watch the event.
So she did the big intro, hey, this is awesome. Yeah. And then she brought all the people on the stage. And every one of them came up and gave her a hug. And she was going to shake Ron Wyden's hand. And then Ron Wyden came in for a hug. And I wanted to ask her, does he smell like Stetson or Werther's?
Ooh, what does Ron Wyden smell like?
Because it's not you're like, she's like sniffing him. But when you hug somebody, you get a smell.
Yeah.
You know, you get a whiff.
Exactly.
I think that's a fair first question for Brooke.
That's the first question.
What does Ron Wyden smell like?
Werther's or
I'm not going to give the options. I'm just going to let her choose her own adventure.
What if she doesn't like the question
and just hangs up on us?
What?
What? Excuse me?
She'll be diplomatic and laugh, because that's Brooke. But
or she'll give us the real answer. Not great.
Guy doesn't wear deodorant. You wouldn't believe it. It smells horrible. Come on, Ron.
I have Ron Wyden smelling like car pine.
Mm.
You know, like one of those pine trees that you put in a mirror. The flavor is pine. I have him smelling like that.
That's not a bad one. I got Brute in my mind.
Brute.
He seems like a Brute guy.
Yeah. Maybe that's a poll question.
What does
Ron Wyden smell like?
I'm sure our followers...
If we tagged him, would he respond to it?
I don't know if it was one of his staffers would...
Give it a retweet. I'm sure people would handle that well, because, you know, the political climate in this country is very tamped down.
Smells like a commie!
That's exactly what you're going to get.
Oregon State's got Purdue at the Big House this weekend.
Bring on the Boilermakers.
Chainsaws are going to be running. Down in Reser Stadium, Vegas line says sub 6 points. Now, I want to be fully transparent here. I don't know where Beaver Fan is for this game. It was a weird game to think about because Purdue is coming in with no buzz. They just got buzz sawed by Notre Dame.
It's 42-0 at the half.
66-7.
Yeah.
They also had a bye week two, and in week one, if you haven't seen it, they beat Indiana State, the Fighting Larry Birds, 49-0. So I have a two-game sample size where they lost by 58 and they won by 49. I have no read on Purdue. I think people claiming they do are lying. There is no sample size of this Purdue team that is clear and definitive.
No.
But I did mentally Monday come in thinking, oh, we're going to roll Purdue. This is going to be great. This is our rebound week. And it may end up being that. But Vegas is not saying that that's the case. This is sub 5 now.
Yeah.
And that doesn't have to be the indicator. But this is a massive weekend for my Beavs. What are the expectations for Oregon State with Purdue following a Civil War beatdown?
Yeah, I look at this game very similarly to the game that Washington State had with Texas Tech. I love Oregon State's chances this weekend. I think you're at home. You're coming off a tough emotional loss in a rivalry game. Josh Pate, our good friend who joins us every Wednesday, he likes to use the terminology wounded animal mode. And I think there's a difference between losing a tough rivalry game at home and just getting embarrassed on national TV the way that Purdue did, that I think you're going to get a really good effort from Oregon State. I went back and actually watched this game yesterday. It's funny, we talk about what are we watching during the week when there's not football on. I go back and watch football games because I just miss them during the weekend, and yeah. I'm curious what they look like.
I watch more football stuff.
Exactly, that's what I'm watching, right? So this game was on, I believe, at the same time as the Apple Cup and the Civil War, so I didn't see a second of it on Saturday. I'm just laughing as the scroll goes across the bottom of the screen. And it made me even more reaffirmed in my stance that I like Oregon State this weekend. Now, the one caveat I'll add to that, I don't know what to make of Purdue's offense against Oregon State's defense. If you're a Beaver fan after last week, you're not feeling great. They didn't get a stop the entire game. Now, Oregon's got a lot of weapons, and their offensive line was set a little bit. Notre Dame has an elite defense. We can make fun of them for losing to Northern Illinois, but you have to acknowledge their secondary is elite. Their defense is good.
No, they're a good team.
They lost that game because their offense just was lost in the wilderness for whatever reason, and they got too high on their own supply. So I don't know I can't get an accurate read on Purdue's offense and what they're bringing to the table. What would have me salivating if I'm an Oregon State fan is I think we can all acknowledge that Notre Dame does not have the best offense in the country.
Mm-hmm.
They were already down a starting offensive lineman. They lost another starting offensive lineman, I want to say, on the second or third drive of that game.
Yeah, that was
unfortunate. And he's out for the rest of the year. So they're now down two starting offensive linemen. You know how many yards they ran for against Purdue?
362.
360!
And you knew they were going to run.
Every play. They didn't even try and throw it. They knew that they were going to run it, and they ran it down their throat. They had two different guys that averaged over 9 yards a carry. And so, and what killed them in going back and watching the game was the zone read stuff. Riley Leonard killed him in the zone read, and then when he was handing it off, it would suck a linebacker or a safety in to track him because you had to keep an eye and be honest. And so I look at that and I see what's Oregon State's strength offensively?
Running the football.
Running that. You got two good backs, you got a quarterback that can move, a good offensive line. Like, that's where I like this matchup a ton for Oregon State.
Swag, what are your expectations when you think of Purdue-Oregon State?
I think Oregon State should control the game. For Oregon State is, can they avoid the mistakes, penalties, missed opportunities when they get down into the red zone? Can they trust their field goal kicker? Those sorts of things. They should be able to control the line of scrimmage offensively, control time of possession, limit Purdue's possessions. And so then the question is, can they finish with touchdowns? If they do, then I think they win by double digits. If they can't, it's going to be a white-knuckle ride.
When you think of the score in your mind, give me two scores. Both of you give me a score that you see in your head.
35-31.
31-21.
35-31.
Mm-hmm.
So you think this is a very close game?
Yeah, I'm not saying blowout, but I like your chances here. But largely that to me is just I don't know what to make of Purdue's offense.
Well, I think that's the tough part is and Notre Dame's defense is better than Oregon State's, certainly.
Yes.
I don't know what to make of the offense either because I only have these two games and it's like Indiana State is nothing and Notre Dame is significantly better than them.
Yeah.
The over-under is 50.5, by the way.
That's a big number.
Yeah.
So maybe more points in this one than you think going into it. I think this is such a massive game for Trent Bray and Oregon State. My Beavers took a beating last weekend, and they also had some other things that's a little concerning. Attendance, the amount of Duck fans that infiltrated Oregon State. I think the Pac-12 stuff, I know social media would have you believe that it was the most universally celebrated thing. I think the reality is it bummed people out. It was like, cool, we're this now, like permanently. And permanent can be 4 or 5 years, but you know what I'm saying.
Yes, at least for the short term, this is your future.
The last thing they can afford is coming back after that game last weekend and laying an egg and losing to Purdue, because Purdue is not a great team.
It's a winnable game against a power conference
A power conference.
In your building.
In your building, and their weakness is your strength, and like this lines up for you to rebound. And if they don't and they lay an egg, it's going to, dare I say, panic. I don't want to go there, but it's going to be a real uncomfortable feeling, I think, for Oregon State fan of, oh my God, Purdue was a win to us in our minds.
Yes, it was.
Because they just got housed by Notre Dame, and they're also not supposed to be very good this year. But now you lost to Oregon in a beatdown, and then you followed it up by losing to Purdue. UNLV looks good. Boise State looks good. Washington State looks good. Is 7-5 in your future? Is 6-6? Like, you start to go to some troubling areas in year one for Trent Bray. And it doesn't have to be an indictment on Bray. I think what I'm just highlighting is this is a massively important game for Oregon State to rebound in.
Yeah, I'll go back to what I said on Monday, and I know we disagreed slightly on this. I actually liked a lot of what I saw from Oregon State, considering the talent gap, and especially their offensive game plan in the first half, to limit Oregon to 3 possessions, to shrink the game down. They don't have a down-the-field passing attack, but we knew that coming in. They're not going to have one this year. So a lot of it has to be RPOs, quick slants, just get the ball out. They did a great job of managing third down in terms of getting into a 3rd-and-2, 3rd-and-3, 3rd-and-4, in which you can lean on your run game or have a quarterback just have to scramble for a couple yards and pick one up. If you can follow that game plan, shrink the game, control the clock, I don't know what to make of Purdue's offense, but I know that they don't have the firepower that Oregon has. Hudson Card is a guy who's played a lot of college football. He's their starter. He was kind of a Texas high school legend. I believe Will Stein coached him in high school. He started a couple of games for Texas right out of high school and then has kind of bounced around and been a journeyman, one of those kind of college quarterbacks. So he's seen a lot of different things, but I don't have any reason to believe that this Oregon State offense can't move the ball against them. And if you could do that, ease some of the pressure on your defense this weekend, I think you got a great chance of winning this game.
We had a Pac-12 note from one of the coaches in a potential future Pac-12 team. We'll get to that at some point today. Brooke Olsendam coming up at 7:30. Coming up next, a local fight. We got a local fight, local-ish fight, next on The Fan. All right, Brooke Olsendam live from Corvallis. She's excited about Oregon State Purdue, even though she's a Coug, Pac-2. We'll get into some other college football odds and ends, some NFL stuff as well. We got Brian Nimhauser, Hawk blogger, been covering the Seahawks for quite some time. Talk about the Seahawks at 8 a.m. with him.
Yes.
First time he's been on the show. We'll get back into Oregon State Purdue stuff a little bit more probably tomorrow as well.
We got to make our picks today, too. We got to make our big
PP picks coming up at 8:15. Thank you.
Yes.
Much like Zigger Zag for you, I sometimes forget about the big PP.
It happens.
There is a local battle happening.
Who's battling? Who's beefing? What do we got going on?
I know you haven't checked. Maybe you have, and you're just a little scared and don't want to talk about it. USC has passed Oregon in the recruiting rankings.
Oh, what are they ranked right now? Where are the rankings at? Look at you diving into 2025 recruiting rankings.
I've been following recruiting rankings.
You sicko. What is the matter with you?
Neither are top 10.
No, they're not.
USC is 11 and Oregon is 13. Now, Oregon has one more 5-star than USC.
USC just got a 5-star wide receiver the other day.
Depends on who you're talking to.
Oh, maybe
he's
a
one
4-star?
Of those 4-star or 5-stars, depending on the website. I hate that system.
So stupid.
Can we get a universal system here and stop confusing me?
No, we cannot.
But yeah, USC is committing really well. They have a massive game this weekend, maybe the biggest game of the weekend, depending on your perspective. Tennessee-Oklahoma, I know, is also happening.
It's a 1A, 1B situation for me.
But USC beat LSU. They have rolled since that game, and now they go into the Big House where they're favored on the road against a feisty Michigan defense and an orgy. They're just going to run. There's going to be a running orgy in Michigan this weekend because that kid can't pass at all.
I like those.
But USC, interesting spot for them. Some people on this program were burying Lincoln Riley. He was done. He's a bum. He's over.
Have we re-anointed him two games into the season?
I'm just saying it's a nice start for the Trojans.
He's back, baby.
And now they've bypassed your duckies in the recruiting war.
Yes, because where you rank in recruiting on 919 is vitally important to your long-term success and health as a program.
Just saying. Just pointing it out.
Look, they have been awesome two games into the season. They had a bye week last week. These early season byes are so weird. Oregon has one this week. USC one had one last week. We just talked about Purdue. They had a bye in week two. Like, what? Why are we playing one game and getting a bye? It's just very strange the way the schedule shakes out.
Two in college now?
There's two in college now. Yes. Everybody's got two, I believe, in college. So it's just that to me is weird. The hard read on USC is it's so funny. You see wins early in the season and you have a takeaway because you have a perception of what a team is. And so for USC, I know myself, questioning what their defense is going to look like, how are they going to play coming into the year, have they made gains and improvements where they needed to, and look at that, they're taking on LSU, who's supposed to be a really good team this year that has a lot of NFL talent. Well, I watched LSU play this past weekend, and without egregious officiating errors, they probably lose by two touchdowns to South Carolina, and South Carolina ran all over them. So that's why it's hard to gauge just how teams look. I think why I'm so excited about this game, it's one, a winnable game for USC. Michigan is not what they were last year, and that has been evident through the start of their season. They struggled with who they have, Arkansas State last week.
Yeah, and they struggled in that game.
Offense struggled to score against Arkansas State. But what we do know about Michigan is that they're big and they're physical and they're tough up front, and they will always be that. Texas was able to go in there and body bag them, and I think part of that is because the most underrated part of Texas is how big and physical and strong they are up front, that we focus on all the skill guys and Arch and Quinn Ewers and look at all this talent, and then you realize, oh, that's right, they're absolutely loaded on the offensive and defensive lines as well. That's why they're a national title contender. This is a much stiffer challenge, I would argue, for USC up front than LSU was. Now, LSU has more skill players, they have a better offense and all that, but Michigan is bigger and more physical, mm-hmm. and it's a quintessential Big Ten game. Like, they're going to try and ugly it up, play defense, shrink the clock. Can you hang with them at the line of scrimmage? If you do, I think we're talking about USC as a playoff contender on Monday if they win this game.
You wouldn't be shocked, though, if come Monday we're talking about how it was a dogfight and...
No, not at all.
It was ugly and gross, and when Mason... Miller Moss, excuse me, gets sacked a million times.
They struggle to run the ball a little bit.
This is a easy trap game for USC. They just beat Utah State.
They had a bye week last
week,
so they beat Utah State in week two, and then they had a bye.
Yeah, and you get a big LSU win in a pretty ugly game, but you eke it out, and your defense wins, and you get a last minute touchdown. And so it's like, oh, look who's suddenly smelling their farts. It's USC. And now they go into Michigan. Well, Michigan's got no quarterback. Yeah. And Green Bay didn't have a quarterback last week, and
they ran the ball
against the Colts, and they just ran it down the Colts' throats because, you know, God forbid they prepare for the run. I wouldn't be shocked if that's what happens on Saturday. Michigan just runs the football and says, no, we're bigger than you up front. We're going to push you around. We're going to run for 280 yards today, and we're going to hopefully win 17-13.
Yeah.
And if that happens, it's going to be kind of what it's been for Lincoln Riley. A little bit of like physicality questions, toughness questions. How about your offense? It's flashy, but it's not physical. There's going to be some of that takeaway. If they win, yeah, even though Michigan is down, Michigan's going to be one of those 8-4, 9-3,
totally.
Tough as nails, punches you right in the mouth like... Oregon wins, but Oregon comes out of their
21-17 is your final. It's
going to be ugly, but that's who Michigan is. I don't look at Michigan's game last weekend and conclude USC's going to steamroll them. I think Michigan had a look-ahead weekend. Arkansas State, USC's in town this weekend. Okay, they eked it out. They won that game. This is a massive test for them. They are recruiting better, but also they want to build on their momentum this season, even though it's only been two games. You win this weekend, and I think you're right. I think come Monday, we're having real, like, man, we need to put USC in the playoff conversation.
If they win this game, they're down. I mean, somebody would argue
Big
that
Ten
they're
title game
there.
Conversations.
Totally.
Like, that's what it's
going
to be.
The other thing they have going for them is their schedule. So they don't – now, coming into the year, everybody assumed Ohio State and Oregon were the two best teams in the Big Ten. We'll see if Ohio State's looked the part, but they played nobody, and Oregon has looked the part one of their three games, and we'll see if they continue to look the part. USC doesn't play either of them this year. So you get through this game. The hardest game remaining on your schedule is Penn State, but you get them at home. You got to go to Washington late in the season. You get Nebraska towards the end of the year, who looks pretty good defensively, but we'll see as the year goes on.
The weather might be really crappy for them, too, in Nebraska. So.
That game's in L.A. at least, but they do have to go to Seattle the week before that or 2 weeks before that in early November, and that could be a funky weather game, November in Seattle. But the schedule is very manageable for them. I love this because of the ramifications of a win and a loss on both sides. Mm-hmm. Like, for Michigan, if they lose this game, man, you're 2-2 out of the gate. An embarrassing loss to Texas. How do they lose it? Do they lose by two scores? Does USC light them up like Quinn Ewers lit them up? And their defense maybe isn't as elite as we thought. And fine, you got a good defensive line, but you clearly can't hang. Like, that is a tough slap back to reality with the NCAA stuff hanging over your shoulder. That to me is a massive storyline in the sport of last year's national champion, 2-2 and eliminated from the playoff largely through a month of the season. And vice versa for USC, what we're talking about, if they're able to win this game and what it would mean for them, their playoff hopes, and the direction they're going. The only question I would have on them in the future, because you mentioned the recruiting rankings, I'd be curious to go look, because I don't know this off the top of my head. How many of those guys are defensive recruits? Because that's always been my criticism of Lincoln. He's a good recruiter. Yesterday's was a wide receiver, yeah. And I don't know how the rest of them shake out, but he's always been a great recruiter. He's always gotten the best quarterbacks and the best wide receivers in the country. Their whole offseason was about reinvesting and getting bigger and more physical and tougher, and that's great. You can do it a little bit through the portal, but it's a culture thing. And so how many 300-pound defensive linemen are in that recruiting class? How many stud linebackers are in that recruiting class? Nobody has any issues with USC in offense. Their issues are defense, and that's what they need to address.
Coming up next, the WNBA announcement yesterday in Portland. The MC of the event, Brooke Olsendam. She's on the road right now with the Rip City Rally stuff. She's going to join us live from Corvallis. What was it like to host the event? The WNBA is back in Portland. And what does Ron Wyden smell like? All that is next on The Fan.
All right, welcome back in. 7:33. Hope your Thursdays are off to a great start. Big news in the city of Portland yesterday. We talked about it on the show. We talked about it earlier today. We got a new sports franchise coming to town, baby.
Damn,
everybody's
right,
excited about it. Joining us now is the queen of Rip City, Brooke Olsendam. At Brooke Olsendam on Twitter, Blazer Balcony Podcast. Of course, the Blazer sideline. Courtside reporter. Brooke, good morning to you. I apologize for starting in an uncomfortable spot, but we would be remiss if we did not start here. We have now been debating for a bit on the show. What does Ron Wyden smell like?
Oh, my goodness. Let me think about that. If I had to put it into words, I would be a combination of perhaps like a pine tree and cotton candy.
Yes, you called it pine tree. You called it with the pine smell.
I said it, Brooke, because I saw everybody gave you a hug after opening ceremony started, and you looked like you were going to shake his hand, and he came in for the hug, and I thought, pine tree guy. He has to smell like a pine tree.
Did you really say that?
Yes. Yeah, I did. Yeah, I did.
Oh, my God. I swear I did not. I swear. I haven't been with me. I woke up about 5 minutes ago.
Yeah, we'll
I'm in Corvallis, so I did not hear that, I swear. That's hilarious.
Is it uncomfortable? Like, first of all, I want to ask, do you get nervous when you host these events? That's a massive news. It's like, historically, we're going to watch that, looking back at the history, UMC the event. But is it also a little uncomfortable because you just... you're being professional. You're going for the handshake. People coming in for hugs. Oh, I guess we're hugging. I'm sure you've met Ron Wyden before, but like, what is that whole experience like on your end?
Well, I'm going to be completely honest. I've met Ron Wyden and interviewed him many times. So when he walked up, I just did something different to him, like, hey, you know, like hands, like jazz hands.
Right.
So my plan was to hug him. I wasn't going to hug everyone but Ron Wyden. That would have been weird. You know, I was hugging the commish, hugging the owners. And then I just did a little extra dance when I saw Ron Wyden. If it appeared like I was handshaking him, that is not accurate, I swear. I was really going for the hug. I was just doing a weird dance beforehand. But to answer your other question, I don't get nervous, but I will tell you, I was the one thing I wanted to nail was the Bethal's last name. That was really important to me, getting people's names right. And so the second I said their names and I said it correctly, I was fine. I just wanted to get that out there and make sure it was done correctly and said correctly, respect for them, and they're wonderful people. So that was the one thing I wanted to nail. And I guess if you could say if I was nervous about anything, it was that. And as soon as I did, everything was fine. And we were off and rolling. And I was there. Everyone on that panel was so great in their own way that, I was just kind of maneuvering and quarterbacking the whole thing and making sure they had their moment to speak and do it well. And in those situations, I take them really seriously because, like, you're totally right. This is something that we'll watch forever, and it's such a big deal and so important. But I still want to make it somewhat, like, you know, chill and fun and relaxed. Like, that's kind of, like, my MO. I don't want it to be too stiff. So I got a few, like, little one-liners in there. But for the most part, I wanted to stick to script and make sure I – you know, gave it the respect it deserved.
Well, you did an awesome job, and we can relate to the last name thing because we have guests on from time to time that we're not 100% certain, and then we will, like, repeat it 30,000 times in the commercial break before we bring them on to make sure, you know, phonetically sounding it out to make sure that we get it right. And then usually the first time you say it on air, you screw it up because, you know, we're idiots and we forget things quickly. Let's just talk about the significance of the day. I mean, I'm jacked for this. It's a city that, you know, we have been desperate for more entertainment and more sports and another league, and this is one that I think always made sense. That the Portland Fire were wildly successful for the short period of time that they were here many, many years ago. It always made sense. Just the significance of the day for you as a sports fan and the WNBA coming back to Portland.
It was huge. I mean, it will go down, like, it was one of the coolest things I've ever been a part of. I was so honored to be asked to do it. And, you know, I'm here in the Rip City Rally. I'm in Corvallis right now. So I came here after the event yesterday. So we've been pretty busy all week. But as soon as, you know, we knew this was going to happen, you know, I made sure that all my bases were covered here so that I could get back for it because there was no way I was going to miss that. But all day long there was an excitement in the air. You know, there's a buzz. It was so – I got there early so I could kind of get the lay of the land and make sure, you know, do sound checks and stuff like that. But watching all the fans and media and everyone kind of start – filtering into Moda Center. I mean, they just kept coming and coming and coming. And it was the excitement level was through the roof. And then when I got to chat with the owners a little bit beforehand and everyone else, you could see the excitement there. And when it finally got rolling, it was like, this is a really big deal. You kind of had to step back and think, like, wow, this is really happening. You know, we've had so many false alarms and not for lack of trying or lack of effort from people wanting to get a team in a W team in Portland, but, you know, you kind of got excited and then it didn't come to fruition. So the fact that we're all here, we're on the stage, people are here, it's happening. There was just, I don't know, there was like something in the air. It was really, really neat. And I cannot wait for this. The fan base here, the sports fan base in Portland, it's just perfect for something like this. And especially, I'm not the first person to say it, but with all the storylines around the WNBA right now and all the excitement around it. You know, you got Caitlin Clark, you got Angel Reese, you got all these names that are household names now that I can't think of a better time, a better place for a WNBA team, and the fan base is just jacked and ready to go. So, yeah, this is a moment right now that I haven't felt for a while. I'm really excited about it, and I love that the Trailblazers front office was there, a lot of other media members to support, and I think it's going to be the perfect partnership.
Yeah. I would be stunned if you weren't involved with the team when they start in 2026, so I guess I'll ask you as a future employee with them and you're obviously what you're doing with the Blazers, are we concerned at all internally that Ron Wyden created tampering charges because he dropped Sabrina Ionescu's name a little uncomfortably with the whole what she was monitoring and keeping track with? We said earlier we'd be shocked if she wasn't wearing a Portland uniform on opening night in 2026. Are we worried at all about losing draft picks or money or fines or anything like that?
I think it was just all in fun, you know. Let's hope so, at least. Sabrina, you know, she will be technically available at that time. It's fun to talk about. It's fun to think about. We'll see how things go. It's not like something you can definitely plan for, but isn't it fun to think about? You know, her being in town, going, showing up, and little girls and young women and everyone, for that matter, young men. And adults that just love Sabrina Ionescu. I did, watching her in college. I was a huge fan, and I still am when she's in the W. So I can't imagine a better fit. But again, we can't control that. We'll see what happens. I did love that. I mean, might as well drop it. I love Ron Wyden. I could listen to him talk all day. When he was done, I was sad.
Well, look, if you're not cheating, you're not trying. So I think we're off to a good start here, right? You got to be aggressive in sports. That's how you got to do things. And you can't. We don't even have a team technically yet. You can't punish us yet. We're 2 years away, so they can't do anything to us. Let's stop burying the lead, though, Brooke. Anything you would like to say about this past weekend's Apple Cup?
Ooh.
Wow. Little old me? Oh, no, nothing. No. Yes, I would. That was the coolest game ever. It's a funny story. So I'll make it short, but my son turned 9 on September 1st, and he has a little friend named Lisa. She turned 66 on September 1st, and they have this cute little connection. They're birthday twins. She lives in Milwaukee, so every year for his birthday, I drop him off for a couple hours so they can hang out, and they bake, they do, you know, fun birthday twin stuff. Well, so I live on the other side of the river, and it just does take so long to go home. So I just kind of was milling around Milwaukee. But it was Apple Cup day, so I had to watch the game.
Yeah.
So I found just like the sports bar. I think it's called Champions or Stadium. And I went in, and it was full of ducks, obviously. there were some beavers sprinkled around, but I was the only coo, and they had the big screen was the Civil War, obviously. And then I sat right in front of the Apple Cup, the smaller screen, but I found it. And I was just by myself, but so excited. And then it was just like serendipitous. I don't know what this group of four walks in, all in coup gear. And I don't know them, but they sit at a table next to me. I was like, "Where have you been?" They're like, "Hey!" And so then it was us five. And then when the Civil War ended a little bit earlier, and the game was, let's be real, honest, earlier than it was actually over. So the actual game that was going on, that was like, who knew which way it was going to go, was the Apple Cup. So the whole bar kind of started like joining in with us, like, so we became kind of like a rooting family, because let's be real, Ducks don't want the Huskies to win, and the Cougs are never really good enough for anyone to care, so they jumped on our bandwagon. And so it was so much fun, because of all these people, I didn't know a single one of them, were all rooting for the Cougs at the end, and I was not okay. I mean, I was leaning forward. When you start leaning forward in your chair, you're getting nervous. Yeah. That was me. And people were talking, I was like, "I love you. I know we're friends, but can we just not talk right now? Let's just wait till I can't talk right now." Because I've been in that situation so many times as a Cougs fan, where you think it's going your way and something, it's neck and neck, and then it just gets the rug gets pulled out from underneath you. I've been there so many times. So the fact that happened to stop, it was awesome. This one guy next to me, I can't remember his name, but he was a hoot. And as soon as we got the stop, he goes, "Boom shakalaka!" He's like, "Yes."
I want to ask, is the Cougars, you have such a reputation of being very kind and nice to people in the industry and outside of the industry. But are the Cougars the one exception to get Brooke Olsendam to turn to somebody and say, "Can you shut up?"
I think a Husky coming in might be the time when you don't see Brooke be very nice.
There have been, back when let's be real, I've gotten a little calmer in my days, and like as I get older as a college football fan, I used to live and breathe, like I would cry after losses. This went into like late 20s, and then after you kind of start working in the sports world, you guys kind of understand, I think,
you lose the spark a little bit.
It mellows, and so when you lose, I'm like, "Oh, bummer." But I mean, the Husky starts, if you start something, if you knock on my door, I'm going to open it. So okay. That might be the one place. I mean, I'm not going to get mean or nasty or anything, but when, I have fun with the rivalry. I have a ton of Husky fans or friends that are Husky fans, because just, state of Washington, but I won't get too low, but if you start it, I'll stop it.
I feel like Brooke went Breaking Bad it. There. Like, I
she
am
did.
The one who knocks.
I am the one
be
who
careful
knocks.
Over
I am the Coug. Brooke Olsendam. She is the queen of Rip City. She just woke up in Corvallis, kind enough to join us on the show after the big announcement yesterday, the WNBA coming to Portland. Awesome job hosting the event. I'm having a hard time wrapping my mind around basketball season actually being here, so let's pretend that's not the case, because I'm just getting into football. I'm like, I can't handle all this stuff. It's a little too much, but can't wait to see you back on the call for Blazer games, and thanks as always for hopping on the show.
Absolutely. You're having sensory overload with all these sports coming at you. I get it, but you wouldn't have it any other way.
That's right. Great stuff from Brooke Olsendam. It was cool yesterday, man. It was really cool, exciting for the city.
Well, imagine being part of that.
Being part of it. I mean, to your point, that you're going to play that for 20 years.
Yeah.
You look back, hey, this is where it all began.
Yeah.
It'll be Brooke Olsendam right there hosting it. She did an awesome job with it. I do want to, we're going to talk some Seahawks coming up at the top of the hour. I want to get to a couple of college football notes, and a five-layer burrito is involved. You guys five-layer burrito fans?
I was quite fond of the seven-layer once.
Seven-layer guy?
At a certain drive-thru, yeah.
Okay, where would you put it if your team lost? What? Next on The Fan.
It's crunch time.
Let's go!
Where Dirt and Sprague crunch the hot topics you want to hear.
What's the pressure? Don't sit here and act like there's no... We get nervous teeing off in front of a gallery on the 10th hole at Eastmoreland.
Crunch time, brought to you by Crunch Fitness, with memberships as low as $9.99 per month. Find your crunch time in Portland, Vancouver, and online at crunch.com.
Crunch time, as always, brought to you by Crunch Fitness. Memberships as low as $9.99 a month. Find your crunch time in Portland, Vancouver, or online at crunch.com. Coming up at the top of the hour, in a mere matter of moments, we will go up to Seattle and talk about the undefeated Seattle Seahawks with Brian Nemhauser. He's going to join us, Hawk blogger. Does a great job covering the Seahawks, so that is right around the corner. Our big pee-pee picks on the horizon as well.
Yes.
We are in the midst of college football season, in which people continue to make wild guarantees about things that they will do if something happens to their team.
Florida State loses to Cal. I think we need to really start saying they're not going to win until that fan eats the crap.
Are they cursed forever because he didn't eat the dog poop?
And he's a coward. He deleted all his accounts.
He did. There was a Florida State fan said, if we lose the game, who was that week two? Who beat him? Boston College, I think?
It was Boston College.
He said, if they lose to Boston College, I will eat poop out of a cup.
Yep.
I'll eat poop.
Yep. And I'll record it.
And I'll record it.
Yeah.
He did not. They lost the game. He did not.
He deactivated his accounts.
Many people now think they are cursed until he eats
people
poop.
People can't find him. Eat the poop.
Well, Kansas State saw that and said, hold my beer. You're going to eat poop. How about this? There is a Kansas State fan. They play BYU this weekend.
Good win for them against Arizona last Friday.
Dude, and they dominated that game.
BYU? More good? Feisty than people thought.
Is they good? Are they good? I think they're good. Kansas State fan has said, if Kansas State loses to BYU, I will shove a beefy five-layer burrito up my...
You know what?
Right in the butt?
Yeah. Yeah. So...
Brain gas!
Here's my first initial thought, okay? Here's my first
initial
thought.
What's wrong with people? Why are we doing this? Who's this guy?
Well, this is my thought.
Yeah.
He just wants to put a five-layer burrito in his butt.
I think he's kind of just wants to try it.
Because why would you offer that up?
Of all the things to put up...
You could do a
beefy five-layer burrito?
I'll sing the fight song and record it.
Yeah.
I'll make a bet with one person, $100 bet. You could just do run-of-the-mill bets or promises. Why did you go straight to the five-layer burrito being shoved where the sun don't shine? Makes me think you kind of want to do this.
You're just into this stuff.
You're just
that's your thing. And there's nothing wrong if that's your thing. You know, do whatever you want to do, boo. We don't kink shame on this show. That's what you're into at home. Hey, go for it, buddy.
I don't know what that would do to your system.
I don't know.
Does the Taco Bell hit you harder?
It's like people put the drugs.
Yeah. It hits you quicker.
It just right into the bloodstream. Yeah. That horse meat's getting right to you.
Yeah.
Woo! Five-layer burrito, by the way, super underrated item on the Taco Bell menu.
You think it's underrated?
I do. I'm a big five-layer burrito guy, and I don't feel like it gets the credit and the respect it deserves.
I think the five-layer gets more credit than the seven-layer.
Mm.
Seven-layer, it's like somebody gets nervous about that extra two layers.
That's a lot of layers,
dude.
I can't handle seven layers here.
I can.
Whether I'm shoving it anywhere, I don't know, but I can't handle seven. Five, I can handle. Seven, too many.
Also, how do you go about wiggling that up?
I don't know. You sit on it? I don't know. I'm asking questions. So if Kansas State loses and this guy doesn't shove a burrito up his bum, they're now going to be cursed. So be careful what you wish for.
Yeah.
That's the lesson of the day.
I think you got to freeze it.
No. That'll be...
Otherwise, it doesn't go up.
Freeze it. That makes... Makes all the little corners sharp.
What comes in with a
whoa!
Those corners get mighty sharp.
But if it's not, to Sprague's point, if it's not in solid
it's just
form,
mush.
It's not. You're yeah. just mush. It's nothing's getting up there. You know.
Why
science.
Did he go there?
It's science.
Why did he go there?
I don't know. On a more serious note, here is the UTSA head coach.
It's a spicy proclamation.
It is very spicy. That has to burn. You got a hot sauce on there, too? Oh, God. Here is the UTSA coach, Jeff Traylor, saying the quiet part out loud about what his team's doing.
Well, Dr. Campos is more privy to that information than I am, but her and I have talked quite a bit the last few days about that. And obviously, you know, we're committed to the league we're in. And we're very grateful for the AAC, but we have to listen to people that want to talk to us. And I just think it has to make sense for us. Obviously, geographically, it might not be as aligned as the AAC is, but financially, what does that look like for us? You know, we're a program that's only been playing ball for 13 years. Most of our limitations are strictly just that. We have a booster base that's very loyal. They help us. There's just not a lot of us because we haven't been around very long. Mm-hmm. So it's the same people always having to do the most. And if you have the ability to go somewhere that can expedite the growth of a 13-year program, you've got to listen to it. So what does that look like for us? The details, one, she'd kill me if I said it. But two, she's got to be the one to decide that. And obviously President Amy, is the juice worth the squeeze?
Right.
And I'm just not for sure what that looks like exactly yet, but I do know that that is a real conversation that's happening as we speak.
Is the juice worth the squeeze? Jeff Traylor saying, just, I mean, they're openly talking to the Pac-12, you acknowledge it. Kind of interesting to see a coach actually do that. Usually this stuff happens way behind the scenes, but they asked him on his coach's show. He gave a very honest answer about it.
Yeah, how much are they going to make a year on a TV deal?
I don't know.
Because I think the valid thing is...
What's the AAC at right now?
I mean, it can't
five
be
or six million.
West.
Has to be somewhere in that range at most,
might
right?
Be sub five.
Might be sub five. So if you get to 10, you're doubling your money. To his point about
you're doubling your money, but you're doubling your travel. Your travel expenses will substantially go up because you're talking about what, Fresno State, Boise State, Oregon, Washington State.
I mean, the hope would be you'd have teams in your pocket where Memphis and Tulane are close by, and then you get a South Florida maybe, and you could have your West Coast pocket and your East Coast
pocket.
But
we said this about the Big Ten. Oregon's not playing USC this year.
No.
So like,
you play one of the LA schools every year, but not both of them.
I thought it was going to be a guarantee those four play each other, and it's not. You play three of them, or two
of
them.
Yeah.
So I just, he's right. It's juice worth the squeeze. It's just how much they can make on that TV deal. If it's in the 11 to 12 million, I think it's worth the squeeze.
Yeah. Somebody's saying, I'm going to go out on a limb and say, unless you're very experienced in the art of shoving things there, it's sneaky hard to do. P.S. Thank you for making me think about how one would go about getting that done. Well done. You're welcome. I hope your Thursdays are off to a great start.
They better not lose.
And we made it. They better not lose. Okay, everybody's got to keep their eye on that game this weekend. Let's talk some Seahawks with Brian Nemhauser. He covers them. Hawk blogger, 2-0 start. Where do they go from here? Brian Nemhauser kicks out the final hour next on 1080 The Fam.